Welcome back to Mind Over Splatter. My name's Dylan. We're purging tonight. It's springtime, the season of renewal. I'm kicking back, releasing the beast with an IPA from Ovel. Ed Sheldon is here too. Hey, Sheldon.
I'm here. I'm back.
Ed, Sean O'Rourke is back. Hey, Sean.
Hi. Blessed be the new founding fathers and you for having me again.
Right, so as I mentioned, we're doing The Purges. The Purges are a franchise that I wasn't super familiar with before I started preparing for this episode. I got really into the idea of doing it because I was like, where I live in Quebec, we have a curfew. We've had it for several months at 8 p.m. and some jokers have taken it upon themselves to put speakers on balconies and blast the purge siren at 8 p.m. when the curfew starts. And I don't know, I couldn't stop watching these videos. I found them really funny, and that made me realize that I should probably start watching the movies. And
can I just say this? Living in downtown Winnipeg, we don't get the privilege of hearing that sound. They're just fucking purging outside every day, all day.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the Purge movies have been very open about wanting to be a reflection of the years that they're set in. Which is recent years, since 2013 when the first movie came out. So we're going to be talking about the movies, what we like and don't like about them, and talking about them in context of the years in which they came out, because they are very much nestled into current events, or at least try really hard to be, it would seem. So are we ready to get going here?
Oh, yeah.
So there's four Purge movies, and what we're going to do is we're going to talk about them one at a time, moving through the series chronologically. And after we discuss each movie, we're going to say where we place it in relation to the other movies that we've discussed so far in terms of how much we like it. So by the end of the episode, we'll each have come up with our own list separately of how we rank the four Purge movies. So this all started with The Purge in 2013, which was written and directed by James DeMonaco, who the series is his baby. DeMonaco wrote all four of the movies and directed all of them except for the most recent one. Kind of unusual for a horror franchise that were four entries deep, and it's all still really just one guy running the show. And really, The Purge is a home invasion movie. It's has a lot of comparables around the time it came out. There were a lot of home invasion movies happening around then. The Strangers, Your Next, Don't Breathe, things like that. A lot of movies where people were trapped in their homes and had assailants trying to get in were coming out around that time for some reason. Maybe we can discuss why that is. But of course, The Purge adds a conceit, a twist, a bit of a fantasy element to it. And I think most people know what that is at this point. Yeah. Even if you've never seen the movies, the conceit of The Purge has really penetrated the popular consciousness.
This is why it took me so long to start watching these, because they're so dumb.
Basically, the idea is that one night per year in this alternate version of the United States, all crime is legal. So people go and settle scores and go kill people for fun and go on rampages. And there are reasons why the government does this that they get into a little bit more and more with each episode that we'll discuss as we go along. But that's basically the twist, the conceit that's been added to what is otherwise a home invasion movie. It's a family that's trapped in their home. The patriarch is Ethan Hawke, and him and his wife and his teenage daughter and their young son have to survive the night with assailants at the door. So, like, why is he even adding this conceit to the home invasion movie? I think there's two things that it's accomplishing. One is just purely practical, that it allows for a situation where the people can't call the cops because emergency services are suspended during the purge. We're told that.
Could you just cut off the power?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the usual way that they would do that in other movies.
The better way to do it.
The other thing is that it gives a reason why they can't just flee the house, because there's murderers all over up and down the block. You know, the whole town, the whole United States are full of murderers. So it gives a neat explanation for why they have to stay trapped in their house all night. Of course, it's doing more than that. I think the other principal thing that this conceit is doing in the first Purge movie is that it's allowing the movie to kind of maneuver around, or maybe turn on its head, depending how indulgent you want to be towards the movie. The subtext you got in a lot of home invasion movies, especially like the first wave back in the 70s, which tend to be about fear of like urban rot and crime in your city, which often has these kind of undertones or associations that can be classist or racist. And the movie really steers away from that by creating the situation that allows for the assailants who are attacking the house to be explicitly white rich upper class people. And they also have like a black homeless person who is defended inside the house. The leader of the people who are trying to break into the house is a guy who's very pasty white with slick back hair, who's also wearing a blazer that has like a little logo on it that really looks like he's just came out of some expensive institution of higher learning. Polite leader is, I think, the way that he's credited.
Yep.
Yeah.
Played by Columbus Blue Jackets winger Patrick Laine in his strong performance. Before we get into the details, I wanted to throw it over to you, Sean. Like, the idea that it is a home invasion movie plus a conceit, what do you think the conceit is adding?
It makes it interesting to me. Like, I think a home invasion movie from that time without that conceit wouldn't really hold my attention. Like, just another Straw Dogs or whatever. Just the idea that, like, all crime is legal seems kind of half-baked as a concept for a movie. But the backdrop and how they build it up in the first movie really holds my attention. And they, like, for better or for worse, it gets quite world-buildy as we go on. Mm-hmm. But it does what I want decent dystopia to do, which is it, like, exaggerates the present rather than imagining the future. And I don't think that it, like, engages very seriously with an idea of, like, class conflict or, like, the Occupy stuff that's going on in that time in the States. But it certainly uses that kind of, like, that dynamic and that language in a way that makes me pay attention to that kind of exploitation movie, probably more than I normally would.
It is worth pointing out, maybe, like you mentioned the Occupy thing, which would have been like a couple years before this. I think it was 2011 mm-hmm. that went down. And this is from 2013. Also, like one line of dialogue that stood out for me, kind of a throwaway at a newscast, is somebody mentions that the new founding fathers of America, who are like the new ruling class in these movies who have instituted mm-hmm. the purge, they came to power after a quadruple dip recession. And I like that little kind of throwback to those kind of terms that used to be in the news all the time in the aftermath of the financial crisis, where people would talk about it might be a double dip recession. So this is kind of in the aftermath of the financial crisis, which might go some ways towards explaining why there were these home invasion movies at the time, because unlike home invasion movies from the 70s, like Straw Dogs or Last House on the Left or See No Evil or whatever, kind of that earlier wave of home invasion movies, those happened at a time when crime actually was going up in the United mm-hmm. States, right? So those fears of criminals at your door, they came from a more real place, whereas in the 21st century in the United States, crime has been going down year over year, even though the public perception isn't always that. But you can't necessarily blame or credit, I guess, the rise of home invasion movies on that. But if you think of it in terms of the financial crisis, the idea that there are a lot more people who were financially unstable at that point, who might have been afraid of losing their houses. A lot of houses were being foreclosed upon at that time, that maybe some of those anxieties were at the root of these fantasies of like people being at your door, trying to break in and ruin your life for you and your family.
It really shows like all of the villains of the movie are sort of cartoonishly upper class people. So there's like that, mm-hmm. Just that general angst against, you know, the idea of like the 1% around that time comes through quite a bit.
Yeah. Sheldon, you seem hostile right out of the gate.
I didn't want to be, trust me. I went into these movies hoping to like them.
So if you compare The Purge to, like we've been doing, to something like The Strangers, agree or disagree that having this idea of Purge Night is adding an interesting element?
It's so fucking dumb. I couldn't enjoy this movie because of that stupid idea.
Why, though?
It's dumb. It wouldn't make any sense. I'm aware it's a horror movie and there's going to be some, you know, shady ideas out there, but this idea of being able to do anything you want for one, I couldn't do it. It's so dumb.
I think of it more as like hyper real. The whole series is sort of a reflection of things going on around at the same time, but like a hyper realistic reflection of the bargain struck in American capitalism, of that like brutality that you have to live with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
More expressive than realistic.
It wasn't even just that idea, though. This first Purge just flat out sucked. It's a shitty home invasion thriller. That's all. It's worse than any other one that came out in that era. It's boring. It's so fucking predictable. It hurt when you predicted something and it happened.
Okay, yeah. So let's get into that a little bit, like how it works, like as a thriller, as an exciting movie. I don't think it's a knockout. Like, I think a lot of the scenes are not bad, but not great. Like, the conceit is doing a lot of heavy lifting here. One thing that did kind of annoy me about this first movie in particular, but also all of the four, is that a lot of the, like, high-tension scenes are resolved with what I want to call the there's always a bigger fish solution. You know, somebody's pointing a gun to the main character's head and somebody else appears and shoots that person.
Yeah, just off screen, another gun.
Yeah, that kind of happens way too often to the point where I totally expect it to happen all the time and I'm often right. It was just too bad because it sucks some of the tension out of those moments that they might otherwise have. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't exactly call James DeMonaco, you know, a tremendous director based on the evidence we have of like the way he stages these scenes and stuff. I also would have, maybe this would have been too much to ask for, but I would have appreciated having a better introduction to the layout of the house they're in, because I found the layout of that house like as confusing as the Overlook Hotel. Like I had no idea which rooms and hallways connected to what. You know, this might be asking a lot, but if they had put some work in the start and showing characters walking from one room to another to introduce us to the idea of what's connected to the what, that might have made for more like tension and excitement when people are being chased through the house and have to go from one room to the next.
I thought they could have easily just shown a blueprint of the house when he was like setting up the steel doors down, just like have the blueprint there.
Yeah. You know what? They could have.
Then just show us exactly what the house looks like inside.
You mean when he's punching in the passcode that appears to be his birthday, October 13th, 1982.
I guess so. Like force it in there like they did with the fucking robot thing or with the fucking heart rate monitor. Just force that scene.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been too hard to do. You're right. Because like our main character, Ethan Hawke's character named James Sandin, his job is that he sells security systems. Wouldn't it have been out of character for him to be like, here's the layout of the house. Remember the procedure. Something like that would have been pretty easy to shoehorn into the movie.
Yeah, like two transitional moving camera shots of someone going to a room. That's how the house looks.
It's his first attempt at making a movie, I assume, so I'll give him credit for that.
It's a second time directing. James DeMonaco directed a movie called Staten Island that I don't know anything about, but that also has Ethan Hawke in it, and he'd written a number of scripts before this one. He started with Jack, the Robin Williams movie. He also wrote the remake of Assault on Precinct 13, which is kind of relevant to the movies he would end up making, and which also had Ethan Hawke in it. So him and Ethan Hawke, old buddies. Let's talk about Ethan Hawke, because I think that he's like one of the strongest things in the movie. I'm a big Hawke guy.
Yeah,
that's a good performance.
I think it's a very good performance. Like, he brings a lot of depth to it. He's not like an Atticus Finch hero by any means. Like, you know, he's often struggling with his dad role and getting it wrong and can kind of like be a prick at points. But I felt him, he was relatable. I felt like I could easily be in his shoes, and that's all on Hawke's performance. It, like, none of that was coming from the dialogue. It was all coming from his performance. I'm a big Hawke fan. This was a good year for him. Before Midnight came out in 2013, too.
Oh.
And so you have probably his biggest commercial success and his biggest art house success happening the same year. I mean, it was by no means obvious this movie would be a big commercial success, but it was. Hawke did it for scale, plus a percentage of the back end, which ended up being very profitable for him, certainly. Yeah. He did it for $3,000 and he slept on the producer's couch while he was doing this.
I'm pretty sure he did it as a favor for this director and begged him, please, and make sure you kill me off because I don't want to be in another one of these movies.
Well, apparently he's actually good friends with both James DeMonaco. Again, this was the third time they've worked together. And also Jason Blum, the producer.
So they're friends. It was a favor.
It sounds like a favor, but it was one that ended up being very remunerative for him because it was a big hit and he had a percentage of the back end. He'd also done Sinister a little bit before this.
Yeah, I was just thinking, is that Blumhouse too?
That's Blumhouse too, yeah. Maybe one of the first times that a Blumhouse movie had kind of a star in it. I don't know if it's pushing the envelope to call Ethan Hawke a star. Is that going too far?
He's a star in my heart for sure.
And the proceeds he made from Sinister ended up being a portion of the budget, as I understand it, of Before Midnight. So his foray into Blumhouse horror movies helped produce one of the great classics of the past couple decades. So anyways, good year. In retrospect, 2013 was the year of the Hawke and nobody noticed. What else do you guys think about this movie?
There's like moments of it that are like humorously like prescient. The whole movie feels like the St. Louis gun couple from last summer to me.
Oh, right.
It's surprising to me to think about that. It came out in 2013. Because when I was rewatching it, I was like, this could very much have come out this year with the same kind of tone and content, more or less.
Speaking of movies that have like a similar tone in content, I was really thinking while I was watching this, like, there's not that much daylight between The Purge and like a European art house movie by like, you know, Ruben Östlund or Yorgos Lanthimos, or, you know, definitely Lars von Trier could have made this movie.
Sure. Well, and I was thinking It's very much like the culture industry gets a hold of Haneke, or I don't know how you say.
Yeah. It could definitely be a Haneke movie. Yeah. At least from one angle, it's like a crisis of masculinity movie. And this upper middle class white character who also has to grapple with his privilege and his guilt and is thrown into a situation at the crossroads of his masculine crisis and his guilt. And we have to see, how is he going to do? How is he going to handle it? How is he going to hold up in this crucible? Which, you know, that's not that different from something like The Square or The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I'm not sure there's that much difference between these movies. And I'm not saying that either as a way to insult those European movies or necessarily as a way to elevate The Purge. I just think it's interesting to consider them as part of like the same cultural current, even though like they're made in different countries for different audiences and would play in different theaters. So there's not much overlap in terms of who's a fan or who's watching these movies. I think they belong in the same conversation and they might be coming from the same place.
Yeah, they all have that kind of like sardonic reflection back on the audience of like, you love this, the cruelty for the cruelty's sake thing.
Right. Exactly.
Like yeah. the torture mm-hmm. porn too, from the decade preceding, like Hostel and all that.
They definitely indulge the audience in finding the villains like cool in their creepiness and like showing slow motion shots of them dancing through hallways and stuff.
And that gets so much worse as the series goes on
too. Yeah. Yeah. The scourge of gratuitous slow motion gets worse and worse with each entry. That's totally true. Do we like this movie?
No.
I kind of do.
I kind of do too.
You don't like it?
I do like it. I don't think it's a spectacularly well-made movie, as I've said, but I like Ethan Hawke, and I like the idea.
You weren't upset by how like predictable it was?
I didn't find too much of it predictable. Like
the second they introduced the neighbors giving her cookies, and she said, "We're jealous of you," it's like, oh, they're going to come back and try and kill him.
Oh, yeah, that part I saw.
Totally. And then when that happens, you're sitting there thinking, wonder where that black dude went. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
I would call it like a replacement level movie overall. It's not terrific. But relative to the rest of the series, I think it's the most, I wouldn't accuse it of being subtle, but it's the most subtle movie of the four. And like, yeah. It has a nice enough tension to kind of hold me in it. And I kind of like the concept as a mechanism for examining what's going on, like contemporaneously to the movie. Mm-hmm. Like I like it purely as a mirror rather than something I'm looking at,
which is something it's very explicitly intended to be.
Yeah.
Even in the first movie, they're already suggesting that the Purge is really there to get rid of people in society that the government doesn't want to have alive.
It's like a privilege of the haves or of the ruling class to be able to do this.
There's the level of what the government's telling them and then what they're actually doing. The government's telling people it's a way to, on a personal level, to clean your soul, to feel better about yourself. But then the unspoken level is that they want the privileged people to help them in getting rid of members of the underclass.
And I think my last like shoehorning neoliberal hellscape stuff onto this, at least this particular installment, is that I really like how, as an idea, The Purge shows really nicely this like liberal tendency to individualize problems. The Purge is individualizing or atomizing the like crushing violence and brutality that we accept as part of modern like American or North American or capitalist life.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So I want to just talk about the conceit a little bit more specifically, like where it came from, because there are like some potential forerunners to this idea. James DeMonaco in interviews has often said the same story, that where his idea came from was that he was in a road rage altercation with somebody. And his wife said afterwards, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was just a day where you could kill people? And he was like, oh, let me get my pen and paper. I'm paraphrasing. But one antecedent that people jumped on right away when the movie came out was a season one Star Trek episode, The Return of the Archons. So from 1967, that imagines a world where everybody is ruled by like a computer intelligence, but after dark, when they have no orders, no directives, they descend into chaos. Somebody actually I saw brought this up to James DeMonaco in an interview. They're like, oh, people were saying that there's similarities to The Return of the Archons. And he said that after he had the idea for The Purge, he told his dad about it. And his dad was a big Star Trek fan. And his dad was like, okay, watch this episode. He acknowledged that he'd seen it before. There is a Russian novella. I think that was first published in 1962 by Yuli Daniel, who was like a seminal a dissident writer under Stalin. He wrote a novella called This Is Moscow Speaking, which had the idea that the Soviet government declares that there's going to be a national murder day. So one day everybody's allowed to commit murder, except the twist in Daniel's story is that national murder day comes and goes and nobody does anything.
Okay. There's something that, like, I go back and forth on all four of these movies. I can't decide if there's a cohesive, like, take from maybe like James DeMonaco's standpoint on the natural urge for violence in humanity that they touch on a lot. Sometimes it seems that the movies are like, yeah, humans are naturally violent. They're going to want to do this. But then oftentimes they'll err on those like heroic, you know, overcoming your base passions stuff. Like when the, well, we'll get to it in the other movies, but
yeah,
it's interesting that in the Soviet one, they go with the, like the nobody does it angle.
Yeah. It's funny to compare that to the Star Trek episode, because the Star Trek episode, like a lot of Star Trek episodes, I think can be seen as like Kirk's ultimate positive perspective on being an American, contrasted with like a Stalinist. This came up in a lot of episodes, right? There'd be a society that was totally under control of some totalitarian regime, and Kirk would be like, you know, individual liberty is what matters or whatever. So it's kind of funny to compare them, how the Star Trek episode, if we can say that it's imagining Stalinism, it's an imagining Stalinism that has taken away, people have outsourced their self-restraint to the state. So they have externalized something that should belong to the individual onto the state, so that it imagines that if the state were to withdraw, they would no longer have these features that they should have, that should belong to the individual, and they would just start murdering each other. Whereas Daniel's Soviet dissident perspective is that the state has internalized itself into the individual. So if the state withdraws, the individual is still going to do what they think they should do because it's become a part of them. And they guess I wouldn't commit murder, which is, I guess, what he's upset about, that, you know, the Russians just don't have that good old bloodlust like they used to. I don't know. But it's funny to see the, like, the different perspectives on the same conceit. Another story that I saw that I had like a really similar idea. There's, I don't know if you guys know the science fiction author E.C. Tubb.
No.
He's a guy I really like. He has a series of books starting in the 60s with this hero Doomerist, who visited a bunch of different planets. And one of his books, I think it was Callan from 1969. I'm not totally sure. I wanted to look this up, but I don't have my Tubb books with me here. But there's one where he visits a planet that literally has Purge Day. Like, there's a planet where one day a year all crime is legal and you can kill whoever you want, and the government justifies it as a way for people to cleanse themselves of their base urges. And it's just kind of like one chapter before it goes on to another planet, but it's like exactly Purge Day that happens in this novel. Not saying necessarily that DeMonaco has read E.C. Tubb, but just
probably did.
Just another example of that idea appearing before. And another one that DeMonaco has mentioned as a source of inspiration is Battle Royale, the Japanese movie from 2000.
I thought about that while watching, not this first Purge, but the next couple.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that.
Which I love Battle Royale. Great movie. And DeMonaco has been upfront about that being a source of inspiration as well.
It does seem like a pretty like easy to stumble on like writer's prompt. But yeah, it's interesting to see how in all of those, there's that thread of they all just kind of reflect back what's happening and around the author at the time. Like, it's as a vehicle for reflection, it works really well.
Yeah. Do we have anything more to say about The Purge 1?
Just that I thought it was really weird that they had less than 1% unemployment.
Yeah. I was also wondering, like, how does that work?
Well, nothing makes sense in this movie.
Well, I'm wondering, like, is the movie trying to say that this actually is a direct result of the Purge, or if it's the result of something else and that's just the propaganda saying that? Because they never really address that. I guess when you talk about how the government is trying to get rid of undesirables, like, some proportion of that, I guess, would be homeless people who have like mental illnesses who can't find a way into the workforce, but that's just going to be a part of it. Even if you did do that, like, the economic systems that create a certain degree of unemployment are still in place, no? And like, unless they also changed the economic system but decided to claim it was the Purge for propaganda reasons, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, like, there's definitely like it's a fasci vibe from the new founding fathers, so
yeah,
I guess they go to like a kind of like a state capitalism thing, but I would have been interested in seeing that idea fleshed out, but they don't go too hard into that in the other three movies. It's more of like political and there's some like social relations stuff, but they don't really show us how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why the neighbors didn't just come back after it ended and fucking killed them.
Because it wasn't the Purge?
No one's judging. There's no refs. A five-minute span. You can say you killed them 5 minutes before that whistle went off.
It's like showing the strength of their, you know, their new society that they're all abiding by these rules.
No, they don't give a shit.
Oh, well, no, they definitely seem to. They definitely, or at least really play lip service to the idea of being good citizens, yeah. Respecting the new founding fathers.
So they're really going to wait 364 days to come back and try and kill them again?
I mean, come on. Maybe. Maybe they've so really internalized the propaganda to such a degree that they don't actually want to transgress what the government tells them to. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, if I'm Ethan Hawke's family and I'm moving away the next day. Anyway.
No, if I'm Ethan Hawke's family, you fucking kill them.
You have to, if you can't suspend your disbelief, at least like lift the corner of your disbelief.
Kill them the second they fucking bring the walls up. No one's watching.
Okay, not
no
even
cares.
That. Not even that. All right.
Oh my God. And this happens in every movie. So when I get to the ending in every movie, I'm going to be pissed off that they didn't fucking kill someone.
All right. Let's move on. Yeah. So the very next year, 2014, The Purge Anarchy came out. And we're out of the house into the streets, where we will be for the rest of the franchise. So this one, I think, instead of being a home invasion movie, The Purge Anarchy is more like in the tradition of something like The Warriors or Escape from New York. Like, it's one of those movies that kind of has Western DNA, like kind of a structure. Scenes and characters that are somewhat like Westerns, but grafted onto this idea of like urban anxiety and fear of being out in the streets and the inner city. And here we have the Purge franchise doing that, going out into the streets. We were introduced to Frank Grillo. Is his name Frank Grillo or Grillo? Do you know?
I think it's Grillo.
I say Grillo. I have no idea.
It's probably Grillo.
Yeah, Frank Grillo.
Grillo shows up as a guy. He's trying to settle a score on Purge Night. And
he's trying to do a bit of a taxi driver.
Yeah, and ends up rescuing and getting ganged up with a couple of other hapless people just trying to survive the night, a couple that's breaking up and now has to stay together, and also a woman and her daughter who are also caught up into it, and they end up roving through the streets on Purge Night, caught between different forces and killers.
I thought it would have played out better if all the separate characters had their own storylines rather than... Because when it starts, I thought they're all going to be different stories of how they all survive. Mm-hmm. And maybe see each other throughout the movie, and but then they all get together, and then they're like a gang.
Yeah.
In my mind, I thought, oh, this is going to be fun, because there's going to be like a trick or treat.
Like a Guy Ritchie movie or something with like three storylines that maybe converge.
Like they'll see each other throughout, maybe meet each other, maybe even have a gunfight with each other. But
like Rashomon it.
Anyways, that's what I was hoping for.
It's sort of a video gamey like series of action set pieces movie, but I hadn't thought of it in the context of feeling like a Western, and I kind of like that.
And we also get introduced to the resistance, the people who are fighting against the new founding fathers.
Omar coming.
Michael K. Williams who, playing a righteous rebel leader. So yeah, impossible not to think of Omar when he's in that role. It's
when we get to the first Purge, the fourth movie, there was such a good chance for continuity they missed.
I kind of liked most of the set pieces, not necessarily because I thought they were amazingly well executed, but I thought there was a fun mix of situations. I thought it was fun too. I thought the pace was good. Honestly, I thought it had a good like excitement and tension from beginning to end, personally. What do you think, Sean?
I thought like it moves pretty good. The most of the action set pieces are pretty enjoyable. It doesn't have the same undercurrent of like tension that Purge 1 has for me. I never felt a lot of stakes in this one. Okay. It just kind of felt like that video game feel of like, here's our crew and we'll go through our each little quest line thing until we get to the end.
So not ever watching any of these or really knowing what they're about. While watching number one, I was just wishing it was number two. Like, why the fuck are we just stuck on one stupid house? Like, why aren't we seeing what's going on around the country? Like, and then obviously I watched number two. I was like, oh, this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, I think also the success of the first Purge and a somewhat increased budget gave DeMonaco the ability to expand his vision like that and to go out into the streets and see the city on a larger scale, which he probably just wasn't able to do in the first movie because of constraints with the budget and everything.
This seems like a redo to me. Like, not a remake or a sequel, like a redo.
Well, I mean, it does kind of feel like that in the way that the next two movies basically follow from number two rather than number one. Like, we never return to being a home invasion movie.
Let's just redo it and call it Purge 2 and do what he should have done in the first place and just redid it.
Well, that might be the case. But like I said, I think it would probably be more of a case of, like, him consulting with Jason Blum, the producer. And I'm imagining. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can imagine the producer being like, okay, let's find a way to distill this to one house because you're only getting $2 million to make this movie. So,
yeah,
like, restrict your vision.
So my hypothesis of a redo, you know, it works.
Yeah, no, I think there's a good chance that something like that did play out. He maybe had all these ideas that he would have liked to do the first time that he's like, boom, I got to do them now.
Yeah, and like thematically, it's a lot of the same stuff. Like, I think there is a turn going into the third and fourth movies about which anxieties they're putting on to the purgers. But like in those first two, it's still very much that, like, you know, 99%, 1% class conflict kind of thing. And the rich people in Anarchy are like really cartoonish. That, like, the auction scene.
Oh my god. Yeah. It seems like they're put under a spell the second this fucking day starts. They turn into this weird cult.
Yeah. So their new civic religion has turned them all.
Like the cult of their state ideology, I guess.
You know, the American dream 50s happy housewife, father coming home from the office job, 2.2 kids or whatever kind of feel. A way to like mask the violence and brutality that upholds that. And that's how I take it.
It was, again, very predictable.
The way that it ends, I thought was pretty fun, and I didn't predict that whole sequence where you have an act.
Oh my!
I meant the climax. The way they end up at the auction and they have to like fight their way out. I didn't see it ending up in that place.
In the paintball arena.
Yeah.
I think I read something about there was like a Halloween haunted house type thing that was Purge Anarchy themed, which seems like it would have just been a paintball or an airsoft room where you could go do that.
Oh yeah.
I really like that about this movie. As Sean said, like all the different situations they put these people in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that too. I like the series of set pieces. I like the momentum taking us from one to the next. I had a good time. It's funny how at the start, I feel like the movie seems like it's being less embarrassed about just like indulging in kind of urban anxieties. But then, of course, as the movie goes along, we get more into the political angle of it, like being clear that the government is actually sending out mercenaries specifically to like housing projects and like low income areas and areas where Black and Latino people live.
Of course they would.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
It feels like it kind of shifts a little bit from like in the first movie, it's this slightly vague, the ruling class, the rich are the enemy, the bad guys, to there in Anarchy. It's now more like the government. And then I think it shifts in the next two movies as well. But I'm going to save that.
I mean, let's get into the whole, like, anxiety about being unsafe in urban areas thing. Because it, like, comes up more strongly in this one.
Well, there's a great line, you know, right before the purge is starting with that married couple where she says, everyone comes downtown to purge. Which I thought was just, like, such a good view of, like, that suburban anxiety about urban spaces. The other side of what the first movie is showing us.
Yeah.
These like hollowed out downtown cores where, you know, the working classes live become like the playgrounds for the rich and powerful who don't live there.
Yeah, like I alluded to earlier, like when these movies in the 70s were coming out, crime was actually on the rise in American cities everywhere. Urban crime in America and violent crime in America peaked around like 91, 92, 93. And it's more or less been just going down year over year since the early 90s. But the perception of that hasn't tracked with the actual decrease. Polls show that often Americans think that crime is increasing more now than they did in 92 when it had been increasing.
Yeah, I think these ones are just like a way of taking like the uneasiness, the hidden violence and brutality of that we all know that we strike the bargain of living under and like putting that on to something else. So crime going down, but you have to put that anxiety and fear somewhere.
Yeah. And we get the unmasking moment when the people actually doing the real carnage are revealed to be government mercenaries driving around in trucks with huge machine guns and stuff.
I love the bad guys in this one a lot more than the first one. What was the main guy called?
Big Daddy?
Big Daddy, yeah.
He had kind of a Super Dave Osborne vibe to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
Oh, this, I think that The Purge Anarchy did feature my, what I think is the funniest on-screen death of the four movies.
Oh, which one's that?
The husband and the married couple.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
It's just a really good, like, tension release moment. It was a literal laugh out loud.
So that's the other thing that made it so predictable. Like, when they got into that household, they think they're safe. Like, okay, which one of these family members is going to try and kill everyone? Because you know what's happening.
Yeah.
I was going to say that also adds to the tension, though.
I love how Frank Grillo, like, immediately ushers him out of the house. Like, fuck this. We're out. Yeah. Like, you guys resolve your own family matters. We're getting the fuck out of here.
He's a man on a mission.
I don't know. I was going to mention the ending of how dumb it was.
This is the one that I would agree with you most on. Like, those like black ops government guys are going to abide by the siren.
The siren happens. They're like holding their guns and then they just put them down and walk away. It's like, no one's like fucking watching. The government wants them dead. Like, what the fuck? It's stupid.
Maybe their body cams are turned on.
just knock it off. Stop trying to defend it. It's stupid. So what's even better is now the real ending, they're driving Frank to the hospital. Like, I get it's like 5 to 10 minutes after it happened, but the parking lot's empty.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
Is it like Boxing Day for hospitals the day after the purge? Everybody works. There's a line out the door.
So I really enjoyed this movie, despite its obvious flaws with the stupid premise, the fucking terrible dialogue.
Yeah, dialogue is not a strong point in any of these.
It's a lot of like wisecracky stuff that falls very flat. That's like a function of becoming a cinematic universe, is you have to try to get like your Whedon-y snappy dialogue.
Yeah, to its credit, this movie doesn't go like head over heels for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, The Purge is happening.
So Sheldon, you've made it clear that you like this better than The Purge 1.
No, this movie is super entertaining from start to finish.
I actually think I would edge Anarchy ahead of the first. I found it more exciting and entertaining. I have a hard time putting it ahead of Ethan Hawke's performance because he's definitely like better than Frank Grillo. He's fine.
I like Frank.
Oh, I don't dislike him. I think he's pretty good. But I just don't think he's Hawk level. He doesn't soar as high as the Hawk.
He had like a Keanu Reeves, like John Wick feel.
Ethan Hawke in the first, or in Purge 1, it's as you said, a really good performance. And I feel like that character is relatable and believable. And Frank Grillo is more of sort of like a blank action canvas. Like, he could be like your video game character. But I think I would make it unanimous that this one is a little bit more overall enjoyable than the first.
Oh, really?
Purge 1. I think that like Purge 1 was more fun for me to like get high and think about because it's so vague with the concept of what exactly the new founding fathers are and how all this works. It was kind of fun just to like think about that in the context of this little home invasion thriller. But The Purge Anarchy is like a more fun action movie than a horror movie. And I think I would probably rewatch The Purge Anarchy before I'd watch The Purge.
So we all agree that Anarchy edges out the first one. Okay, so there's something we got to do here as a little intermission because like it's already coming up. We can't stop talking about it. Considering the world of The Purge and thinking about these movies, you can't help but have questions about the logistics and about certain situations and how it works. Let's just do a clearinghouse here as an intermission before we move on. Let's just air our questions or things we don't understand about how The Purge universe works.
Well, we understand how it works. It starts at 11 and ends at 7?
It starts at 7 and ends at 7.
Yeah,
7. It's 12 hours, yeah. Which, interesting thing, I looked it up. Okay, the first two movies take place in Los Angeles. The hours of sunlight match almost exactly on March 21st. This takes place on March 21st. It sets at 7:06 and rises at 6:54. So you're almost exactly nighttime hours in Los Angeles. March 21st is also around the spring equinox, too. That might be why they pick the date. Okay, so like you've already mentioned, Sheldon, there's the question of like kills that happen right before the purge starts or right after.
There's a truck going around picking up dead bodies and throwing them in a ditch at the end of the movie. Like, no one's going to fucking autopsy anyone.
Especially when once we get to the prequel in the fourth one, we see, like, a bigger capacity for the surveillance state of this, like, you know, fascist-y party. But in the first couple of movies, we don't see that capacity. I guess we kind of have to assume it. But, like, later on, you see some drone capability and stuff, which would have been a few years, I guess, diegetically before the first couple movies. So I would assume that they have a very developed, invasive surveillance and security network that I guess I'm comfortable with just sort of brushing aside and like, oh yeah, they can figure it out.
Yeah, the thing I wanted to touch on related to that, though, is just like the legal logjam you would have after the purge with everybody like making their case about like what happened before or after and whatever would be surely hell for the legal system to try to settle.
What are civic courts like for the rest of the year after the purge?
Yeah. Well, they don't have any judges left because they're all fucking dead, right?
Unless they're level 10. Okay, and another question that I kept thinking of is like, say you set a trap on Purge Night, which lots of people do. We see traps. Ooh. And then nobody steps into it on Purge Night, but the next day somebody gets killed by your trap. Can you be prosecuted for that? Their death happened after the purge, but your action was on Purge Night. Yeah. Is that legal or not?
Are you responsible to disarm the trap?
I assume the purge ones, the cookies were poison.
Yeah, same.
So I thought when they ate them, they would, you know, not die for 12 hours or whatever. So when purge was happening, they would die.
Poison brings up the same question. Like, is it when the action happens that counts? Or is it when the consequence happens that counts?
Like, let's say you have the dude or woman chained up and you're torturing her. And you're having so much fun, you just lost track of time. And you hear that bell, and you're like, fuck, she's not dead yet.
Well, if you get to the hospital quick enough, you can beat the rush.
Yeah. Most people just get around to it later, yeah. Also, like, any and all crime is what it says in the intro. Like, it may seem unimportant to bring up, like, white-collar crime and financial crime, but if that's legal on Purge Night, that's not unimportant. Like, imagine the shit that companies could do. You could, like, stash your toxic waste and then dump it all in, like, Yosemite Park on Purge Night if you wanted to do. Think about all the companies you give your credit card number to. A company could just, like, have an Excel spreadsheet of everybody's credit card numbers, and then on Purge Night, be like, max them all out. Fuck you. Nothing you could do about it.
Well, there is something they can do in 364 days. Track them down and kill them.
Can you commit tax fraud on Purge Night? Can you file your taxes on Purge Night?
I think it's, again, like that, the focus on the individual criminal and violent impulses and not like the large structural stuff. Seems to be a big focus of the series.
Right. Yeah. Because, of course, if somebody says crime is legal, your mind's automatically going to turn to individual violent crime. But the most impactful crimes that happen in the world are not that. They're these like structural crimes that companies are committing.
I thought of that about with like, because we live in Winnipeg, the river here, like personally happens, dump all the sewage in there.
That just happens when it rains too much, though.
They would never do that in Montreal unless they need to do repairs to the system, in which case they just flush everything into the St. Lawrence.
Like, I get their crime is low, but they still have prisons, I'm assuming. People are in these prisons locked up when purge hits. Wouldn't the cops just go around and clear the prison out?
I had that thought too.
Oh, that's grim.
Like, we see the people in the housing projects being victimized, but at least they have a fighting chance.
Or old folks' homes.
Yeah, there are definitely situations of extreme vulnerability beyond just, you know, poor people that are not addressed in the movie and that are uncomfortable to think about.
The plot point of foreigners, I think there's a direct quote, foreigners coming to our capital to kill.
Murder tourists. Or...
But there's also some stuff throughout the series, you know, you'll hear things like, you know, it's your right as an American to purge and all this. And I was wondering, like, is there, or even can there be a practical divide between like an American citizen and not during this? Because if there are no laws, then can you even make a rule about you have to be an American citizen to do it?
I guess also anybody can immigrate to the United States on Purge Night too.
The biggest immigration day of the year.
Right. Everybody just camps out in Juarez and Tijuana and stuff. And then on Purge Night, they all enter and probably get mowed down.
Speaking of Juarez...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Do you know the line I mean? In
oh, I know exactly the line you mean. And I also wanted to underline that line as well. Should we get to it right away? Let's move on. Okay. In 2016, 2 years later, we have the purge election year.
We start to get really on the nose.
Yeah. The great film critic Jay Hoberman had a theory that because of the huge saturation of entertainment-ified politics in American life, every movie that's released in election year is an election year movie. Like, every American movie that comes out during an election year is a movie that can be interpreted either as pro the Republican candidate or pro the Democratic candidate. This is a theory that Jay Hoberman had. I'm not saying I necessarily totally agree with it, but it gives you a fun game to play with all American movies once every 4 years. And I definitely do this, you know, when it's an election year, even if it's like a shitty movie, you get that fun little game where you can be like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this Doctor Strange movie sucks, but if Tilda Swinton is Hillary Clinton, huh, interesting. You know, you get that little game you get to play once every 4 years. The Purge election year ruins the game.
Yeah.
It's no fun anymore at this point. This, fuck, like, I mean, you should have known by the title, of course, but just, like, before I get to the plot, I, like...
The plot is the same as the second one.
Oh, but with all the politics stuff, with all the election year stuff going on, and as far as I could see, it just seems like a really simple entry-level pro-Hillary movie that's like, you know, bad guys want people to die,
yeah.
Good politician says, let us not kill people, okay. And that's so, about it. I don't know. Sean, do you see any other, like, layers to it that I may be missing that save it from being that, like, boneheadedly simple?
Not really, but at first, I had seen this movie before, and I remember the first time watching it for the first, like, act of the movie, thinking that it was actually going to be a Democratic primary movie. And that you had the senator who was using all this language of the 99%, the 1%, the challenging the brutal structures of the working class against this, like, status quo candidate. But then, yeah, this is like, I didn't take a lot of notes, but the big one on the Purge election year is just the liberal turn, because this is sort of the point in the series where you go from the, like, if not well developed, at least, like, very explicit, like, class conflict elements of the first two movies, and now, like you say, you're turning into that, like, anybody who wants to do violence is bad, the real radical action is to vote, and you know, we're vote, and that's how we're going to change the world. These, like, liberal norms are what are really gonna to save us, and are what, like, make America the shining city on the hill or whatever.
Yeah, so just to, like, quickly gloss over the plot, there's an independent is running for president. I think Senator Roan is her name.
Scary.
And yeah, so even though the founding fathers of America have been in power for like 30 years at this point, a totalitarian one-party state that's, like, obviously manipulative and murderous, but they never got around to rigging the elections.
Yeah.
Like they just allow free and fair verifiable elections to take place after all this time of being a one-party state. But anyways, so the Senator Roan, who is the good candidate, has to be protected at all costs because everybody wants her to die, and they've announced that the restriction on killing level 10.
They gave everyone permission to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
She goes, cool, I'm going to stay in my house tonight.
Yeah, and then it turns out her whole team is, like, secretly against her, and they...
Which I just want to point out, like, so Frank Grillo, his character is now her, like, head of security, but, like, I think they say it's been 17 years between these movies, so...
We're in the 25th Purge at this point.
Yeah, and I believe the second movie is the 7th Purge, and, like, I don't know, Frank Grillo's character is... he's not, like, fresh out of college in the Purge anarchy, and he's like still busting some moves in election year. It's a very, like, Liam Neeson-y,
but except without any gray hairs or anything.
Doesn't he have a little bit of salt in there? But he looks exactly the same. There's also the guy who is in the first two, the common thread. He's the homeless guy in the first one, and then so he also appears about the same age.
So who's now, like, a leader of the resistance?
Yeah. He's in with Michael K. Williams's group. I don't remember their name. They seem like a bunch of YouTube tankies, kind of.
Sean, give me the line.
Oh, yeah. Like, for context, some of the characters in the movie are Joe, who owns a deli in Washington, D.C., I think. Mm-hmm. And he's got a guy from Mexico working for him. And when they're, like, getting ready for the Purge and talking about how hard it's going to be, the line is, in Juarez, every day was like the Purge.
Yeah, I also noted that down because I couldn't stand it. And it reminded me of another one of my favorite cringy depictions of Mexico in Hollywood movies, which is Sicario, where the characters cross the border into Juarez. Then they immediately hear guns being fired off and see headless bodies suspended from an overpass. And one character says, "Welcome to the beast." Oh. And then, of course, like, when they go into Mexico, they, like, kind of reset the color balance to David Fincher's piss. Yeah, that shit just pisses me off. It's just so annoying and dumb. And it's weird how, like, this movie, which is so insistent about declaring itself as a liberal movie, is, like, this throwing gas on this fire of this conservative image of Mexico being, like, Hieronymus Bosch's nightmare or something.
But without ever bothering to ask, like, why do we think of it that way?
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting to think. I think this movie came out in July of 2016. So it's really interesting to look at the hope they have in the electoral process and how, like,
yeah,
kind of just, like, accepted that that is this perfect machine of, you know, like, public good and intent. Mm-hmm. And I would really like if the schedule had just had it come out a little bit after the election, and even if they had done some post-production stuff to maybe put some more of that cynicism in there. Could have really changed it.
The only conflict that they present in terms of, like, how to oppose the powers in place is between the resistance group and Senator Roan, because the resistance group are like, we're just going to assassinate the leaders. And she's like, no, that's not the right solution. We will defeat them at the ballot box. And from the movie's perspective, she's unequivocally right.
It's a very horseshoe theory ass movie.
Yeah.
The Marxist-Leninist-styled revolutionaries are just as bad as the Christian fascist murderers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily say that the movie positions them as just as bad, but yeah, it definitely positions them as being in the wrong, as having the wrong strategy, the one that will just lead to worse recriminations. And so, yeah, in addition to Senator Roan being protected by Frank Grillo again, we have, like you mentioned, there's a couple people who are trying to defend a business, and they all end up. The one thing I do kind of like is when they end up in like a church and like a purge night ceremony.
Oh, God.
The one thing I liked about that sequence is how it shows how these like Christian conservative caricatures are so turned on by the violence that they insistently condemn. And I kind of like that, like how it's like an erotic event for them.
Yeah. To me, that scene feels almost like Verhoeven-y.
Mm.
Like that libidinal joy and like the violence of it.
So I sort of enjoyed that part, but not much else, honestly. I found this like pretty cringy in terms of like it's...
This movie sucked.
Yeah, just how simple its perspective seemed. Like, I didn't see much redeeming about it myself.
I feel like this movie's like, it's pretty bloated too. You could trim 25 minutes of like slow motion, you know, like edgy looking shots. Like all those, the teen girls with the light up cars and their tutus and it's...
Who show up blasting Miley Cyrus and then just kind of posture for a long time and then get killed and that's it.
Almost like a natural born killer-y, like we're gonna make it look all disturbing and weird. But
I mean, though, like it is a running thread I was already mentioned of having these masked killers who the audience is kind of encouraged to think is cool. It's just kind of fun, like it's a fun element, but it's starting to feel just pretty rote. And like you mentioned, the slow-mo is getting out of control at this point. Like it's still James DeMonaco directing, but I feel like his aesthetics are getting worse in this movie. Like there's a lot of slow-mo and crossfades, way too much for me to feel like there's any real tension or sense of actually being in a place at a time. Like it just feels, just slow-mo and crossfades all over the fucking place. I found the aesthetics exhausting.
Some of the action scenes, well, they'll go from sort of like an undercranked to make it feel quick right into a slow motion. It's extremely disorienting.
Mm.
It was physically less enjoyable to watch this one.
Like they show more of what's happening on Purge Night. Like we mentioned, there's foreigners coming in. You have murder tourism, who are Russians, by the way. Russians dressed up as Americans. we've moved forward in time. So we're showing a more like deep purge world. So I sort of appreciate that. But the more deep purge world just kind of seems like Burning Man with guns.
Yeah, because I think it could have been a little more like... It's kind of interesting to think about those teenage girls as like they've grown up in this, like this has been their reality their whole life.
Yeah, that's all they've ever known.
And what kind of society that would make. But yeah, it's just portrayed a little bit music video-y. It feels thin.
And I gotta say, I feel like we're also starting to focus like more exclusively on Black characters at this point. I think some of the dialogue that James DeMonaco, a white writer, has this Black characters play is kind of getting a little racist-y at some points.
And I think this is a big reason for the director change.
Another thing that I found a little annoying about this movie is it kind of just loses sight of the whole concept of the purge by the end. Like, we don't even hear the siren sound at the end and have the purge end, because by the end, when we're getting into this church and stuff, everything is like hidden illegal shit, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be happening on purge night. We don't even know when purge ends at that point. We kind of lose sight of the concept.
I should have brought this up probably in the like boundaries of this concept, but... anyone else notice the election appears to be in May now? Because they say like May, 2 months after, and it's showing the footage of the landslide victory of the senator.
Anything else to observe about the purge election year?
Yeah, not really.
Yeah, for me, definitely behind the other two movies, far behind the other two movies. Yeah,
it's a significant drop off for me.
Sheldon?
I was watching like funny cat videos on my phone for 40 minutes of this movie.
So you're putting it below Purge 1 as well, Sheldon?
Oh, God, no. Purge 1 is by far the worst.
Oh, this okay. Is, oh, so there's we have a divergence here. Yeah.
Purge 1 fucking sucks.
Okay, so election year is in the middle of these three.
If I watched this one first, I would have probably enjoyed it a little bit. But after watching number two, it's the same movie.
Yeah, but more tedious.
The exact same movie. Watch one or the other. Watch number two. Don't watch number three.
Oh, absolutely. It's the better movie.
And don't even watch number one because there's no point. Number two is what you really want.
All right, let's move on, shall we? So the most recent, but not final, Purge movie, because there's going to be another one coming out.
You need a prequel.
Another prequel?
No, the next one is going to be a sequel to Election Year.
Oh, here's a good idea. When the fucking Purge happens, go to the screening of that for 12 hours. There you go. You'll be safe for fucking 12 hours because you'll be the only ones there.
I should maybe mention that there is a TV show because I think we can't just totally pretend it doesn't exist. But for the purpose of this episode, we are because none of us have watched a TV show. This is not a podcast about TV shows, so it's not in our purview. It is possible that some of the questions we've asked have been answered in the show. I don't know. There's been two seasons of it.
The fourth movie really feels like it's just to set up the TV series.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, I didn't think about that. All right, so the fourth movie is in 2018, 2 years later, and it's called The First Purge because it's about the first purge. Mm-hmm. They could almost have called it The Purge Staten Island because it's set in Staten Island. And I think James DeMonaco, when I look at his biography, it says he was born in Brooklyn, but maybe he grew up in Staten Island because he seems fixated on it. His directorial debut was called Staten Island. That was his only pre-Purge movie. And his first post-Purge movie, which is coming out soon, is apparently titled Once Upon a Time in Staten Island. So he's really into that borough of his home city. So, like the title implies, it is the first purge, and the timelines of the alternate universe and our universe more or less line up at this point. So, it's about the first time that the new founding fathers of America, who have been in power for 4 or 5 years at this point, test out the concept of the purge by having a purge localized only in the borough of Staten Island as like a proof of concept. It continues to get more black, continuing the trend of the Purge movies, like, and has almost an entirely black cast. So maybe for that reason, they bring in a new director, Jared McMurray, who is a black director, though it's still a James DeMonaco script. He's still written all of these. And surprise Marissa Tomei. I like that.
Yeah.
I like surprise Marissa Tomei, which seems to be all her movies now are just surprises because she never gets top billing anymore. So a top quality actor for, I would say, the first time since Ethan Hawke in the first movie, who's the architect of the Purge, but they make her sympathetic all the same. I was almost disappointed because I would like to see a totally sinister Marissa Tomei. I don't think I've ever seen that. Totally. That might be fun.
They pass off the villainy to that like smooth version of Cole Meany. I don't know the actor's name.
Yeah, so like we've got people who live in like housing projects and stuff in Staten Island who are trying to fight their way through the night. And I guess one of the big ideas that they're introducing is that we already know at this point what the purge is really for. It's to kill people who the government sees as undesirable. And we've seen already that they send out kind of kill squads under cover of the purge to specifically target people. And the first purge shows that this was the way they were going to go about things from the very start. So I think that's kind of one of the things that the movie is accomplishing is showing how that's not something that evolved over time, that it's kind of always been in a central part of the purge and why the government did it.
It's always been driven by austerity. Like, I think they even explicitly say either in the election year or in the first purge about how there's not enough to go around for people.
Sean, what do you think about this movie?
So this one is like so very clearly the Trump era one. Mm-hmm. So I think I mentioned before, how I think like throughout the series, a lot of what we see of the purgers are kind of like the receptacle of whatever general anxiety about what's going on in America at the time they want to put on there. Like in Purge 1, it's kind of like the wealthy, then it goes to the government. And then in the election year, I think it's more specifically like conservatives and radicals, like people who are against the liberal status quo. But then now we go like hard into a mix of like the MAGA fascists, you know, the new founding fathers who are coming to drain the swamp and make America great again. And then you have like the deplorables who, and this is another, like, I'm sure everyone noticed this line fairly early on when I think the character is Naya gets trapped and those guys in the sewer are attacking her.
Oh, yeah, he grabbed her pussy.
The guy literally grabs her pussy and she kicks him and calls him a pussy grabbing motherfucker. That's the least subtle
thing. I recognize that immediately.
Yeah.
The thing is, I actually kind of like that scene just because it was so weird and unexpected and creepy until she delivers the punchline. And I'm like, exactly. Oh, fuck, you did that whole thing just for that punchline? Fuck off.
That was one of the most disturbing things I think they had shown until then. I was like, ugh, like that's that Whedon-y thing again.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked in this one is it Van Jones, the CNN guy?
Yeah.
He's doing that interview and there's these great little, they do the like the reverse shot reactions of him when Marissa Tomei is like giving her scientific justification for this. And he gives these little skeptical like faces, which to me is just like this, the centrists showing themselves as like critical or skeptical, the establishment being critical of this outside political force coming in and disrupting the status quo and making things bad. You know, we recognized this all along.
Yeah.
Very like, or very Trump era.
Yeah. Especially that it's Van Jones doing that.
Yeah. Right.
Man, those CNN reporters, they must spend like half their time just doing cameos for Hollywood movies because they turn up in all of these. They love it.
Is that just a function of the fact that there's like five companies that own all media, or because like who cares about the realism?
It's funny because like they don't like care about realism in other elements, but when it comes to news reporters, you got to get a CNN guy. There's some things I kind of like about this. I like the way it ends. It turns into a siege movie in the apartment building.
Yeah. Kind of like The Raid or something.
You go from floor to floor. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you've got all these evil cops wearing masks.
It feels a little John Wick-y. In the way that it's shot, sometimes a little bit to its detriment. Like there's that one blood splatter on the lens moment in the smoky knife fight.
And the CGI squibs look like shit.
Yeah.
They have money, right? Fake blood isn't expensive.
Use the fake
blood. Pure fucking laziness.
This one was a $13 million budget.
Yeah, which is the biggest budget of the franchise.
And they have the worst CGI blood.
Yeah.
And the metal on metal sounds of removing a blade from skin.
Yeah.
Shing.
But like after that, when they get into the building, like I say, I thought the action scenes were pretty good and had good tension. And I thought it was fun. And I kind of liked having the cops wearing grotesque masks. And one of the cops seems to have like a blackface mask on. I'm like a minstrel mask or something. I thought the imagery was kind of good during that whole the whole siege sequence that it ended with. For me, it kind of elevated at the end. Yeah. And you have this gimmick where the people who are purging are wearing like cameras in their eyes. They have contact lenses that glow.
They didn't go anywhere with it though, other than showing people with glowing eyes.
Yeah.
Well, like they didn't use it.
Well, so for me, at first I didn't like it because I was like, it's like one of those zombie movie things where the zombies have their eyes changed. And I was like, I don't like the idea that you can identify who is purging and who isn't, because part of the tension in the earlier movies was that anybody can decide to purge at any moment and you never know who they are. So I was against the idea of having some people signaled out by having glowing eyes at first, but I started to come around to it because I like the idea that like the people whose eyes the government is seeing through are the ones who are like going to kill the most and then are also going to be the ones who are being targeted. So to me, it's like if we see through their eyes, it gives us an excuse to attack them. And I felt there was almost a level of critique of like using these like black stories in an exploitationary way from that angle. Because we start off early in the movie with a message of like gang violence is the real evil in our community, which almost seems to be a message that aligns too much with the message of the new founding fathers. But then we eventually get around, like, again, the movie twists itself into a position where it's on a better side, where like it has a message of the gangs are the people who are protecting the community from the predatory police officers.
I like that a lot about this movie.
Yeah, which is still like a position for a movie to take that feels to me like somewhat transgressive and radical and exciting. And I like that. I like the way the movie repositions itself. And if you take the like seeing through their eyes as like an image of that and an image of like appropriating their stories to nefarious ends, I think it gets a little more interesting from that perspective.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I like that. Because when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, this gimmick is going to become tiresome.
They never used it, though. That's what kind of bugged me.
It does kind of peter out.
Like, we saw it a couple times with Skeletor, right?
Right, Skeletor is the name of the crazy guy, yeah.
In that warehouse is basically the only time it's really used for the creepy effect, right? When Isaiah's running through the warehouse.
Yeah, and then it ends with some Kendrick and we will resist kind of message, which yeah. I guess is what it was building up towards. And yeah, like you said, Sean, this is the Trump era movie.
This is why I'm kind of curious about the TV show as what I assume would be a hate watch, because I feel like this movie is setting up the TV show to be like the Trump era. Here's how the purge started. Here's how the norms changed and America lost its way or whatever. The one thing I really wished was that I don't know the name of the actor. I liked the guy who played Dimitri. I thought it was a pretty good performance.
Yeah, I liked him. His name's Ilan Noel.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I liked him and I don't want to take away from that. But if they had gotten Michael K. Williams in that role to like set up like him radicalizing into political action instead of being the drug lord, that could have been like a nice dovetail.
I would not be surprised if they intended for that and yeah. Michael K. Williams didn't want to do it.
Because like a lot of the first Purge, the fourth movie, feels very similar to The Wire. Like even in the way that it's they're on the corner in those housing projects with the red brick and it's like shot very much like season one The Wire. So I feel like you could have done like a little headcanon tie-in of Omar didn't die. And oh, sorry, spoilers about a TV show from 15 years ago.
You're all about those headcanons.
Yeah, it makes it more fun.
It is somewhat satisfying for me, too, that they're kind of finally straight up inverting the home invasion formula by having it play out as the cops invading the black housing project at the end. So there's a bit of symmetry between the first movie and the first Purge in that way. That's a little satisfying that instead of kind of like maneuvering around any potential racist subtext, it's like actually just taking a direct opposite position. Yeah. Sheldon, what do you think about the movie?
Well, I didn't really like it, but I kind of liked the story. I like the assumptions they made that these low housing people would buy into it and go fucking hog wild. And instead, all they did was just have a little block party.
Right.
And the only people killing them is basically the government.
Yeah.
Like, I get what they're trying to do there, but it suffers from the same bullshit the rest of the movies suffer from. It's just, it was so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is stupid. The writing is awful.
Yeah, this one has, there's a lot of the dialogue seems pretty cringy.
It's terrible.
That last scene, the way the movie ends, I think is pretty good. But in the scene where they're bringing Dimitri out and the character who's like talking to everybody, making way. I don't know. I found like that is a good distillation of everything about it. The dialogue. It seems very DiMonarco writing. It seems like it's coming from outside quite a bit.
Yeah. For most of its runtime, I was not enjoying it and I was against it. But like I've mentioned, like in the last act, I found myself more on the movie's side. And it redeemed itself to me. So, like, for me, it's definitely better than Election Year for sure.
Yeah.
But I would put it below the other two.
I think I would agree with that. Like, Election Year is by far my least favorite. I could rewatch the first Purge and enjoy, like, some of the action sequences. Definitely that last, like, tower siege.
I don't know. This is a tough one. I'll probably put this third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, Purge 2. Then Election Year, then this one, and then Purge 1.
Yeah, so I have the Purge Anarchy, Purge 2, followed by the Purge 1, followed by the first Purge, being Purge 4, and way in the rear, the Purge Election Year.
So I think you're wrong. I know it's your opinion, but I think your opinion's wrong.
Fair enough.
I think if you were like me and you watched Election Year first of all the movies.
I did.
And you still liked it less than number one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Election Year is, I have it by far at the bottom. I think my list is the same as yours, Dylan.
2 and 3 are the exact same movie. So I watched 2 first. I put it in first. They're the exact same. Like, there's no difference in either
except
of them.
Except for all the political stuff, though.
Who cares? Ignore it.
The problem is I can't ignore it, and that's why I don't like it.
You know why I can't like any of these fucking movies? The premise, which I can't ignore. All 4 of these movies suck. I will never watch them again, and I won't watch the sequel. I'm putting Purge 2 at first, because it's the only one that I kind of enjoyed. I won't watch it again. I won't tell my friends to watch it.
I should have known this would happen. I'm definitely watching the Forever Purge when it comes out.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, I'm invested in the franchise now. That's on me. But also, I'm interested.
Like, I think we all agree that, like, none of these movies are particularly, like, very good. But I will keep seeing these movies because I'm just really interested to see how they use the kind of loose concept and then all the world building they've tacked onto it to just reflect back what's happening politically. Because mm-hmm. I think it's just going to get more and more weird and unfocused as it goes.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where they go with the concept since from the start. Obviously, as we've talked about all show, they've been really invested in representing an up-to-date image of America now. So like with every new twist that the real America takes, I'm interested in seeing how it ends up filtered through the Purge universe.
I'd love to see the like their Democrat stand-in candidate take over and then just it remains the same. The parliamentarian said we couldn't get rid of the Purge. Sorry.
Yeah, a Biden era purge could be pretty funny. Just purge, come on, man. I'm sorry, I should have said that.
Instead of the purge, it's now a push-up contest.
All right, well, we've covered the bases pretty well, I think. That is the purge.
I'm glad that's over.
All right, well, thanks, Sheldon. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks. Blessed be.
Blessed be the new founding fathers of America.
No, stop it.
Oh, God.
Thanks for listening. Have a good night. Keep looking behind you.
Speaking of go. Oh, I was wondering if we're giving out spoilers or not. I would, just because my night was fucking spoiled after watching this movie.
Okay, we'll try to avoid it, but go. I think you've got something that you want to get off your chest, so go ahead.
No, I don't. I just wanted to make sure I had that comment in there.